You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast, and we're back. Whether MLS is in fact back might depend on when you listen to this. We are recording now. It is July 6th, a little bit after close to 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we are recording with Pat Murphy. Sir, how you doing?
Oh, just peachy. Better than some of our friends down in Orlando, it sounds like.
Yeah. We'll be getting to that. We've got Ori Benatar as well. Ori, how you doing, sir?
Been doing all right, trying to find some new hobbies in the last few months, but hopefully July and August we'll finally see some crew action and some other sports starting as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold up too much hope for that, but you know we certainly can. And then we've got Alex Stanek with us as well. Alex, how are you holding up?
Not too bad. I've got masks, I've got hand sanitizer, and I'm healthy, so no complaints given everything crazy that's going on in the world.
Yeah, well, that's a little bit better than we can say about, I think, some of our MLS teams right now. I think, well, let's try to crank this one out kind of fast because, like I said, I don't know if this podcast is going to have a really great shelf life. Just before we started recording, we got news that one of the 24 teams playing in the MLS is back tournament, FC Dallas, is not going to. They have withdrawn from the tournament, officially confirmed by ESPN. I've got a statement here in front from the MLS Players Association. And it seems to be that, in general, teams seem to support the decision. It sounds like they had as many as nine players on FC Dallas that had tested positive. Pat or Ori, if either of you have been following this story a little bit further, do you have any more details from it?
I mean, I think we all, anyone who's paid attention the last week or so has almost seen this coming. And maybe not that a team was going to have to pull out, but that there was going to be some issues. Obviously, if you've paid attention to the virus, it's started to spike in places like Texas, Florida as well, not far from where this tournament is supposed to take place. So there's certainly been some concerns about, the safety of the players, whether or not this tournament's actually going to go off. And now we get information about people testing positive. Late last week, we learned that a crew player had tested positive. It hasn't gone exactly to plan so far. The Dallas thing is really the unfortunate one, because I believe there were 13 total positive tests that have been announced by MLS, and 10 of them, including a staff member, have come from the Dallas camp. So on one side of things, it hasn't spread, at least not yet, significantly throughout the bubble, as they're calling it. It's mostly been contained, again, as far as we know right now, to one team, but you don't like to see that at all. Obviously, once you get in the bubble, it's the whole point of that is to, contain these people, the players, the staff, everybody, so that they're not getting sick. But to hear that has started to spread to some degree is not positive. We'll wait and see. The tournament's supposed to start here in 2 days. Dallas's game had already been pushed back to their first game, at least, to an undetermined start date. So we at least knew that was going to happen. I think from an MLS perspective, you tried to be the first, major men's professional sports league back. And, this was a risk you were taking by not having someone else to kind of benchmark yourself off of. And, it's kind of exploded in their face to some extent and maybe completely. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. On top of Dallas, you mentioned we've got a baker's dozen or so positive cases. The one from Columbus Crew, as well as I believe there's a false positive, we believe, for Minnesota United. And then Nashville has one positive, but I've also heard, as many as four others that could potentially have positive cases of COVID there. And you mentioned as well, Pat, that that Orlando is really ground zero right now. I think the state of Florida has over 200,000 positive cases. They've got more, they're getting more positive tests a day than the entire continent of Europe. So this isn't exactly like Bundesliga resuming or anything like that. They're playing this. And maybe, you know, I don't know if for our listeners that maybe haven't been following as closely, can anyone kind of explain the concept or the logic behind this bubble? We don't have, it's not Encino Man going on. There's not an actual big bubble around them or anything, or the Truman Show. But what exactly is this bubble and this concept? They're at a Disney resort, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. They're at the Swan and Dolphin, I think, in Disney World, for anyone who's ever been down there. You know, Disney's got a big sports complex. They've got a hotel. They apparently rented out the entire hotel. And the idea was you get a bunch of healthy people down there and you lock them in a building together and then everything's fine. The problem is that they locked a bunch of healthy people in there with a handful of unhealthy people. And now they're trying to keep the unhealthy people away from the healthy people while still trying to do this tournament. And we've already had one team drop out. I don't know why they are still pushing this as hard as they are. When you look at the social media feedback, it's almost universally cancel it. And they're going to get 35,000 people watching them on ESPN, not during prime time. So, I mean, I don't know what the goal here is at this point. But I don't think it's going well. I hope that they cancel the entire tournament. As a fan, I will not be able to enjoy it. I'll be worried about, you know, is the player that my defender is marking sick with COVID? You know, I think on some level, this was designed to kind of, you know, they thought, oh, well, fans are going to want a distraction from the coronavirus. Coronavirus is the story of this tournament right now. It's not, you know, who's in form, anything like that. I don't think that coronavirus is ever going to not be the story. So I don't know. I respect them for giving it a shot, but I think that this is going to be a really hard thing to kind of put back in the bottle. I mean, putting the genie back in the bottle, I don't think it's going to work at this point. But yeah, they're in this allegedly sterile environment down in Florida where they've got nobody going in or out except staff members. But who knows if those staff members are sick? You know, who's cleaning the rooms of the COVID positive players? You know, where is all that stuff that's going in and out of that room going? You know, are we really preventing those people from leaving their rooms for 2 weeks straight? It's not a great situation. So I think Dallas are smart to head home. I frankly wish the crew would join them.
Well, and you know, not only has Dallas withdrawn from the tournament, Carlos Vela, reigning MVP, is not going to be participating. He is choosing to stay in LA with his wife, who is pregnant with their child. And of course, there's you know, mountains of evidence, or not mountains maybe, but significant evidence that suggests that, you know, pregnant women may be more susceptible to COVID-19. So we certainly understand, and I think most people support that decision. But, you know, when you're talking about the star power in MLS, this opportunity that I think it sees is again, you know, the rush to be first. So you could get this captive audience to watch your product. And it sounds like, you know, again, with the hours that aren't going to be great for these games, you know, crew I don't think have a single nationally broadcast game, and their games are all starting at like 10:30 on Univision. I guess, Pat, you had mentioned this, and or you might know a bit about this too, in our chat before, but that this, or seemed to suggest that this tournament is being driven by the likes of ESPN and you know, the broadcasting companies that have television rights for MLS. And is that the case with this? Can we elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a major thing. You know, any of these sports leagues that are trying to come back, especially in the United States, you know, we've seen some success overseas where, let's be frank here, the whole situation has been handled a lot better. And I'm not just talking from a sports perspective, but these American leagues, you know, there are TV deals that are in place that, you know, obviously they'd like to get as much out of them, both parties. You know, ESPN, Fox, whoever it is, has spent the last multiple months re-airing old games, having people do, you know, Zoom chats and whatnot. So there's an appeal on that side. And then also from an MLS, an NBA, you know, whoever it may be, you know, they want to get their games on TV. So they get the ad revenue, they get those type of things. And I think from MLS's perspective, and, you know, I think we're starting to see that this maybe wasn't the right way to go about it. But at the time when they first announced this, it seemed like, all right, if you're the first thing back and you're able to do it successfully, well, now you've got a ton of eyeballs on your sport. And, you know, at that point, we didn't know what the times were going to be. We did know that, you know, you can't play 90-minute soccer games in the middle of the day in Orlando. But, you know, if this comes off and they are able to get games in, I can see why MLS, you know, wants to get it done. They also want to have, you know, an 18 to 22 game season after this, ideally in home markets. Now, let's remember, let's remember when this all started to come about, when we were, you know, talking about the bargaining with the players union and things like that, you know, the numbers coming out of Florida were very different. You know, I think that there was at least some sense behind it at that point in time. As Alex pointed out, and you read the numbers off, Bart, I think, you know, everyone can agree that things have changed. And, you know, now it's about what MLS thinks it can accomplish safely. I've talked to a few guys, a handful of guys, I'd say, that are down there from a couple teams, and there's been kind of a mixed reaction. I think, you know, everyone kind of views this as, you know, a silly kind of tournament, even from the beginning, because it's not really the regular season. But, you know, some guys I talked to, especially early on, were just excited to be back and be playing. You know, now guys are obviously less excited about it, especially guys that, you know, have families at home and things like that, that they're leaving for, you know, potentially up to over a month. That's obviously, aside from preseason, something you don't see. So I think you've seen some people come out on Twitter, you know, Matt Lampson from the Crew, obviously someone who's immunocompromised, having battled cancer. He made it very clear his thoughts, and that he knew other people within the bubble were in a similar situation. So, you know, I think MLS had an idea that they thought was going to be good. I think it has not gone off the way they expected it to. And they're trying to, you know, save face on some level and, you know, try and make as much as they can out of it on the other. Because if it doesn't come off, and they already have not only these TV deals that they've arranged with ESPN and Fox and Univision, but, you know, they've got these people in the hotels. They've paid to have teams travel down there. I mean, there's been a solid investment that they've made into this. And so you'd like to try and get something done. But, you know, I think to Alex's point, you don't want to do that if that means that players are unsafe or will return home unsafe, or, you know, can have some sort of longer term future effect that, you know, is negative.
Yeah. And I mean, I get that other countries have brought sports back, and I think there's now a big push to kind of join that group because American sports are bigger and more profitable than any of these other leagues. But I mean, you look at baseball in South Korea or something like that, right, coming back, or soccer, I think, is back in South Korea, maybe. You know, South Korea's had 13,000 cases total since this whole thing happened. They've had 284 people die. There were 50% of the total cases in South Korea identified in Florida yesterday. They had over 6,000 cases identified yesterday, just that one day. So it's apples and oranges. And I don't think MLS could have picked a much worse spot for this tournament, you know, other than possibly parts of Texas. And at a certain point, you just have to make the right call for the health and safety of your employees and say, this is not good to go, and pull the plug on it. I would love to see them relaunch this in Canada or in some sort of other area in the United States that's not a hot spot. But this is really playing with fire, and it's showcasing the worst elements of this sport in professional sports in America in general, which is that they do not value the health and safety of the players, they value profit. And, you know, MLS has always portrayed itself as different from all those other leagues, and that, you know, oh, we're a family. You know, the Crew say, well, we're not just fans, we're family. Well, you know, I wouldn't put my family in the middle of Florida right now. I don't know about you guys, but I wouldn't send my, you know, relatives down there. And I don't think that the league should be sending these guys there either. So we'll see what happens with it. I hope that they make the right call, but I'm not enjoying the tournament at all. I'm not hyped about it. And it's a sad situation.
Yeah, I mean, just from a perspective of trying to just watch soccer or get into something where, you know, you can break down scenarios and enjoy a game or two, I'm excited for that aspect of it. But there's so many layers that you have to think of with everything that MLS has done and people trying to compare it to what's been happening in Europe. You look at the way MLS approached this tournament. They did rush into it. You know, they announced the tournament all but, what, 3 weeks ago, late June, had the draw a few days later, and then games starting in early July. So there wasn't much of a preparation behind it. And now you're seeing sort of other leagues start to take that approach. The NHL just today, as we recorded, have a plan in place to have teams arrive in the hub cities on a particular date, wait a week, and then start on August 1st. Whereas for MLS's back, we've got teams arriving on all kinds of different days. You don't know where those players have been before they enter that bus onto that plane into Orlando. So you're compromising that bubble, which is what we saw with FC Dallas. We've seen an increase of cases in Texas, and some of those players might have not been wearing a mask when they went out, or they might have encountered somebody at a supermarket who might have had the virus. You know, we don't know. But and then you see the way that the Bundesliga and the Premier League have handled it. They've done it so well. But you also have to remember, those are much smaller countries in much more condensed spaces. We're in a situation right now where every state is in a different situation with coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Texas and Florida, very high increases in cases. We're seeing a scale back in reopenings in Texas. But then you have a state like Ohio, which is, I think, handled it pretty well from day one. We saw closings happen. Everywhere we've seen spikes, though, because of a mixture of all kinds of factors. And we're at a point now where personal responsibility is what is the most important. We're going to have to understand that we have to live with this virus while businesses are still open, which is why a decision from Carlos Vela to decide, I'm not going to this tournament. You have to just say, you know what? That's his decision. That makes sense, because you have to make the best decision for yourself. Some people are willing to take the risk and not wear a mask or go out to a public space to, you know, not feel cooped up anymore. But at the same time, we're seeing this increase in cases, and people just have to make the sacrifices. When we're talking about it from a non-sports standpoint, from a sports standpoint with MLS, with what's happening right now with a team dropping out, we're seeing cases going on. I think it's poor planning. You know, they didn't have a schedule in mind. They didn't think about let's have teams arrive on X or Y date, wait a week or two while they're in the bubble, make sure that nobody's positive, and then we can play.
I think it's interesting. You mentioned the NHL, Ori, and I think one of the things we're going to see from the NHL is those hub cities are all going to be in Canada. And that's Agreed. One of the reasons why they're going to be able to. I mean, even Columbus, which was one of the, you know, finalists for a hub city, and again, a state that certainly on the front end of this handled the crisis pretty admirably. I think others might say we let it get away from us. But that is for debate on another podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, so you knew that Florida, though. Come on. Yeah. I mean, this is when they first announced Florida or Orlando, or started, you know, leaking it out in mid-May, like a day afterwards, Ron DeSantis, the guy who put on a mask backwards, their governor, is saying that we need to open up Disney World because it's an essential business. And I, you know, believe that, you know, I'm sure it employs a lot of people at minimum wage, and gouges a lot of tourists, but, you know, helps the economy by bringing people in there regardless. But you cannot open up Disney World and then say, this is the place where we should have sports start again.
Totally. I agree. Cause you see what's happening. I mean, from a personal perspective, I have a cousin, Pat knows this cousin. Mm-hmm. He lives in Florida. He told me he was driving around for 3 weeks in June. He didn't see one person wear a mask. So yeah. You're seeing people in Florida be a little more lax about it. I think all around the country you're seeing more people be lax about it, but the NBA is going to be in Florida. But they at least have an out to stay in that bubble. They're building their courts in the conference rooms of the hotel rooms that teams are going to stay at. So they literally are going to stay in that bubble playing out the rest of the season. And right now, the only professional sports league in the United States that is playing right now, had a plan and picked a good spot, is the NWSL. The National Women's Soccer League is playing in Utah. They had a plan for their season. They announced it a month before they started play. They knew about testing. They knew about the bubble. And I don't know why the NBA and the MLS picked Florida. Personally, you want to be as far away from this as possible. Don't pick a major city. Who cares if they're playing in the middle of a farm in Montana or something? No fans are going to be going anyway. There's no less cases there.
That's really what I don't get, because unless it really was ESPN coming down, because ESPN has Wide World of Sports there, it's more convenient for them from a production perspective, because you can play these anywhere. It doesn't matter if they're in Canada, because your broadcast you've got the rights to broadcast them. I mean, go play it on Easter Island. Whatever you need to do, but why in the world were they? I mean, I feel like it just had to have been ESPN coming down, and saying you got to do it, and you got to do it here where we've got everything set up for it.
I think that may have been part of it. I also think if you put yourself in the shoes of medical experts back in, say, late May, I think there was some optimism, at least from the medical experts that I follow, that the heat in the summer might lead to kind of a reduction in infection. There have been other coronaviruses in the past where it's kind of died down a little bit in the summer, and then you've had kind of this low level, and then the fall gets really bad. That's obviously not something that we're actually seeing in reality, though. So that's the only thing I can think of, other than the fact that all the facilities are there. Either way, they should have recognized as soon as those cases were spiking that, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't send additional teams down yet since we're already postponing these games. It seems like at this point they're kind of just trying to save face and trying to figure out some way that they can do this. But, I mean, this tournament's allegedly going to go on until the end of the month. Are you kidding me? Like, you know where this thing is going to be 3 weeks from now? It's going to get worse. This stuff always lags behind. There's no action being taken on the part of the Florida government to try to rein this thing in. People aren't suddenly going out and buying masks. They're not being asked to wear them, except in Miami, which just decided to do that today. Mm-hmm. So I don't see this getting better. I see it getting progressively worse. I worry about what happens if a player gets really ill, with something not even COVID related, right? What do the medical facilities look like that they're going to be sending a player to? If a player blows out an ACL, are they going to send him to a Florida hospital where there's, 1,000 COVID patients there? Are they going to send him to some sort of like a triage unit that they've got set up somewhere in Disney World? Like, what is this going to look like? I don't think it's ideal. I don't think it's the kind of care that these players deserve. Like Matt Lampson said, I mean, we have some vulnerable people down there. People who are more vulnerable than I am. And I wouldn't go there. I absolutely would not go there. So, they got to sort it out. But I hope that everybody just says, okay, we're going to cancel it. We'll take another look at this maybe in August, and we'll try to relaunch this in, Montreal at the Olympic facility or something like that. Mm-hmm. Go play at that Olympic stadium that sucks. Go play there and put them up in a hotel like down the street. I've been to Montreal.
That is the only place that might be worse for players' knees than playing in swamp in Orlando.
But they can go to a hospital there.
That's true.
What I will say is I have some friends in Montreal, and they're saying that nobody's wearing masks up there. So I don't know how they're not getting sick. Maybe that's not a good place. Maybe they should make them go play in Nova Scotia or something. I don't care. Pick a city that has a low level and then plan it. But this is not going to happen, or it shouldn't happen. If it does happen, I'm going to hate it. And as a fan of this league and a season ticket holder, that sucks. That I'm looking forward to seeing my team and all these other extracurricular things are happening that take the fun out of it. So I hope they cancel it.
So for people that didn't see it, Matt Lampson, backup crew goalkeeper, cancer survivor, Columbus native, St. Charles graduate, tweeted on July 2nd, for everyone in the quote, these pro athletes, there's no risk, nothing happens to them if they get the virus camp. I am high risk. And I know for a fact that there are multiple players at MLS's back that are as well, including other players on their way here. This is serious. Then in Don Garber's words, and this is in the AP story today about after Dallas withdrew from the tournament, quote, if there is a situation at any time that I believe that the protocols aren't working and the health and safety of our players is at risk, then I will make the decision to shut down the tournament. That is something I committed to the players and our entire league early on, but this is proving that our protocols worked and our plan so far has been sound. And he's saying that because at least so far there is no at least proof of transmission within the bubble, I assume. How soon do we think Don Garber is going to have to maybe act on that? Or what is, do you think, the tipping point for Don Garber to the point where, you know, he says, okay, we do have to cancel that? Is it another team withdrawing? Is it a player getting hospitalized? Is it a coach getting hospitalized? Is it ESPN's production people getting hospitalized and them saying we've got to cancel it?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think that's a question – you know, that all sports are going to face here is, you know, regardless of whether you're going to do the bubble scenario or you're going to have teams travel or, you know, whatever the situation is, you know, college football is the one that I keep talking to people about, but you know, what happens if one whole half of a team can't play? Do you reschedule again? You know, how, I mean, I just think
well, that was so Dallas's many... case.
Yeah, right. And, but at least in this, you know, it's, I mean, while these first three games were supposed to count towards the regular season, this is still kind of a, you know, rinky dinky tournament that they just came up with. You know, if you're getting into actual regular season baseball or, you know, the NBA playoffs or something like that, and all of a sudden, you know, the one team or another just can't field a team that day. I mean, what do you do? And I don't know, to answer your question, Bart, I don't know what point, you know, you make that decision. You know, I think everyone involved with various leagues wants to see them come back. I just think that, you know, it has to be done correctly. And thus far it hasn't been when we're specifically talking about MLS, which is unfortunate because I think this could have been an interesting idea had, you know, at like what Alex was saying, had it been handled better, had it been, you know, either pushed back further to when some of these other leagues are starting or in a different location, you know, this would have been, you know, at least something interesting to get soccer back on TV. And I do think Americans would have watched, you know, outside of the normal MLS fans, maybe not the 10:30 PM games, but you know, it's just the unknowns. And, you know, I think this is a problem we're going to see for a while now. You know, it looked maybe for a hot second that things were moving in a positive direction, but I don't know if there's going to be answers here for the, you know, the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes down to you have to come in with a well-thought-out plan. You know, if they announced MLS is back in late May or mid-May and we're like, we're going to play in July, that gives you plenty of time to readjust plans you might have discussed before you announced the tournament based on the new cases that are coming up. And you're like, all right, we know exactly what we're going to be doing with the bubble and everything. If you go off of what happened, you know, on the day where everybody in the world kind of realized this is serious, we're in the midst of, you know, a once in a generation event when Rudy Gobert gets infected with the coronavirus, one player, and Adam Silver's like, we're done. It's done. Don't think it's the same situation here, because now we're in a point where there are some social distancing measures, even though there's a whole team that is infected. I don't think it's at a point where the whole tournament is going to get canceled. In my opinion, I would just cancel the tournament because we're in a situation where the bubble has been compromised in a sense. Teams are arriving on different days. You have teams that aren't even there yet that can't even prepare for a game that's upcoming in what's supposed to be 3 or 4 days. But I don't think we're in a situation where the situation where Don Garber would have to say, let's cancel the tournament. If we're at a point where there's 40 to 50 positive cases, or 2 to 3 teams have multiple players that are infected, that's where it gets tough.
What I will say is, I will paraphrase Dr. Ian Malcolm from the movie Jurassic Park, portrayed by the indomitable Jeff Goldblum. MLS was too concerned trying to figure out whether they could, and never stopped to think whether they should restart. But we are going to go with the assumption that everything is going to become hunky-dory, no more positive tests for the crew, no one else in the group, along with Atlanta United and New York Red Bulls, and FC Cincinnati test positive, and they are ready to get raring to go come July 11th. That's this upcoming Saturday. The tournament is supposed to officially get underway on July 8th. Nashville SC is one of the teams that's supposed to be playing that day. And I know they were one that definitely was not in the bubble 7 days ahead of time and has multiple positive tests, but we're setting that aside, everyone. We're assuming everything's going to be okay. So come July 11th, crew taking on FC Cincy, and in a group that, you know, at the beginning of the season, looking at Atlanta, a strong team, but remember, Joseph Martinez out of the picture. New York, certainly, they've lost a lot of people, seen a lot of turnover. FC Cincy is still FC Cincy. This is a group that Columbus looks poised to put on a good, or at least they're well positioned for. And again, with the form that the crew was in before this all two games that we got out of the season. What are your thoughts about this and Columbus's chance in this group?
You know, when the groups were first being drawn, and I say that in quotes.
Yeah, not drawn.
In Charlie Davies' Lucky Charms Bowl.
Yeah.
Drawn like the NBA draft.
Lottery. Yeah, the lottery.
The lottery.
But even before that, my thought was, if you could end up in Atlanta's group, because Atlanta was one of the top seeds, with no Joseph Martinez, I think you probably get one of the weaker top seeds, them or Orlando. And the crew got that. As you mentioned, Bart, the New York Red Bulls are not the same team we've seen the past 6-7 years. You know, they've gone through quite a bit of transition. And FC Cincinnati is FC Cincinnati, so much so that they don't even know what their own head coach looks like on social media. I think this is assuming games are played, you know, this is a group that the crew could take, you know, maybe 6 or 9 points out of, which those points are, again, supposed to count towards the regular season. So I think you feel pretty good about that. And when we talked to Caleb Porter, when I talked to him a week and a half or so ago, he pointed out, you know, that their approach is going to be those first three games we're going to look at as, you know, MLS regular season games. And the knockout stage, which you can win a Champions League spot if you win the whole thing, they're viewed more as almost like an open cup where there may be more rotation and whatnot, which I thought was an interesting way to look at it. So I think that the chances of getting out of the group were high for Columbus, just given, you know, the situations other teams are in. And like you said, the crew, at least in those first two games, now that was multiple months ago, but from what we saw, I think everyone was pretty positive about that start to the season. And you know, the kind of the, what had been put together for this 2020 roster. So I thought it was a good group, at least in terms of the crew getting out and, you know, starting whenever the season picks up with some extra points that maybe wouldn't have had if they just jumped back into the season.
Yeah. I mean, we've discussed form and all that. I think we're kind of at a point where two games in March are kind of thrown out the window in the sense of form.
Sure.
Because, you know, they haven't played in 4 months, essentially. But when you're looking at it from a tournament perspective, not just talking about, you know, whether how they played early in the season, rosters and all that, three third-place teams are getting to the round of 16. And percentages are pretty high. If you can win a game in your group, you have got a great chance of getting to the knockout stage. So for me, this first game on Saturday, it is Hella's real week. Crew are playing FC Cincinnati. They can get 3 points. Even if they go out and lose both games to the Red Bulls and Atlanta United, chances are still pretty high that they are going to be able to get out of the group stage. And the fact that FC Dallas now have dropped out, that's a third place team that's only going to have 2 games under their belt. Let's say San Jose finishes third in that group behind Seattle and Vancouver. If San Jose doesn't get a win, then they might just sit there with a point. Gives the Crew an extra chance to maybe get out into the group. It's also kind of nuts also realizing that the last two MLS MVPs aren't going to be playing in this tournament, Vela and Joseph Martinez. But also it's interesting to sort of, you know, break it down to see where the Crew's place, you know, where would it benefit the most when you're looking at the bracket. If the Crew win the group, then they would face the runner-up of Group D. So a Western Conference opponent, you could get SKC, you could get Minnesota, maybe RSL, maybe Colorado sneaks in there. And then you could face a team like Toronto or Montreal in the quarterfinals. But if the Crew come in second in the group, puts them in a little bit of a tougher situation. You're facing the winner of Group F. You could play LAFC, you could play Portland. And then if you make that quarterfinal spot, maybe Seattle comes in because Seattle's right there, right next to them in the round of 16 bracket. And one thing to keep in mind is that it is not a traditional tournament format when it comes to the last group games, because in a World Cup or Euros, you play those last group games simultaneously, because in previous tournaments, when they weren't played simultaneously, if you saw a team get a certain result, you kind of knew going into it, all right, we'd feel better if we finished in second. We know what goal difference we need. We know how many points we need. So you could theoretically figure out a way to finish in that position. So that is another thing that is worth worth thinking about as we enter sort of the last group games. But if the Crew
gets, as in MLS didn't think about it.
Yeah. So, but the thing to keep in mind for this Saturday's game, just thinking about it from getting into the round of 16 perspective, not just about regular season points, not just about winning this tournament. If the Crew can beat FC Cincinnati, your chances get really, really high to just get into the round of 16. And if you finish in third place, sure, you might face a first place team from one of the other groups, but if you can get to the round of 16, to me, for the Crew, that is, you know, a good success story, even though the grouper is weaker than initially thought of if this group was drawn in February or March.
It's pretty low on the totem pole of, you know, things that coronavirus has taken away from us. But the news cycle of, or the podcast of us all just laughing at FC Cincy tweeting out the wrong head coach, just some other Bond villain ass looking guy for Jamp Stamp or whatever the name is, their head coach is.
Yap Stom.
Yeah, that was cruel and unfair. Okay, it's not up there with everything else. There's been a lot more evil and harm done by this. But that doesn't take away the fact that we were denied some terrific podcast content because of this. And I just wanted to make sure that point got out, because Pat touched on it a little bit earlier, but we couldn't let it slide.
Yeah, I'm gonna be on a Cincinnati podcast later tonight, and I'm gonna definitely make at least one joke about, you know, are we sure that they temperature checked the right guy and not just some random bald dude that they saw in the street? Like, are we sure that, you know, that the team is safe and that they've correctly identified all their players and wrote down the correct temperatures? Or are they just like pointing at random, like, chefs in the kitchen being like, hey, what's his name? Lockadia or whatever. Are you Lockadia? It's 98.6. Okay, we're good. Yeah, whatever. He sucks, I'm sure. So FC Cincy signed him, so he must suck. Yeah, that was definitely a high point for me. The FC Cincy digital team had a rough day that day, and some of the former Crew people who run those accounts kind of went a little bit quiet that day, and you know, wasn't so fun. But we like them, right? We kind of like them, but it was fun. It was definitely fun. Bad day at the office, for sure.
Bad day from your home office.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, they need to get those guys back to the stadium office or whatever the heck, because they're clearly not working. They're just like, oh crap, we're signing that coach today. That was today. Oh crap. Bald guy from Sweden. Where is he from? I don't even remember. He's Holland, a former AC Milan Holland defender. So I should know where he was
a coach. Phenomenal defender. Yeah. Jaap Stam was a great player in the mid 2000s. Yeah. Played for Milan.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure they just Googled bald guy and then whatever the league was. And they just like grabbed the first picture off Google Images. So, well done. That was about the best thing that FC Cincinnati have done. It was art. I loved it.
It was wonderful. And you hate to see it. You hate to see it. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't just accidentally, like, you know, put Greg Berhalter up there or something. Like, oh, look who we got here. Or Jarmo Kekäläinen or something.
At least Berhalter, you could have like come up with some sort of an excuse that, oh, they must have had like a stock image of him in a folder somewhere for when the U.S. came to town or something. No, they literally Googled a guy and found some other random Dutch dude and were like, yeah, this is the bald guy. We're going with this one. Okay, here we go. You don't even know what your own coach looks like. It's embarrassing. They're a disaster. I can't wait to beat him. If we beat him, if we play him.
Well, yeah, and that, you know, it may be an if, but in an article we had earlier this week on the Mass Reporter, I guess it was late last week, talking about, and I think one thing that we will see when these games are played, knock on wood, is crew, you know, set aside that they're playing this in the midst of a pandemic, they're playing these games after a long break and in a swamp, not necessarily the ideal playing conditions. We hit on earlier that first game against FC Cincy. It is going to be played at 10:30 at night. So we're going to get a lot of eyes on that. But I think it's safe to say that, you know, whether through necessity, because more players test positive from coronavirus, or just because you don't want to necessarily have a guy's knee explode after not playing for 3 months, you're going to see a bit of rotation. Tom Badcock on Mass Report had an article earlier this week about some players that he's expecting may see a little bit extra time here during this tournament, especially in this group stage. I'm going to run through a couple of them and then maybe ask you three about some players that you'll maybe be keeping an eye on. You don't necessarily need to point out all of them. But we've got the first would be goaltender Andrew Tarbell. He's his logic behind that, of course, we know John Kempen. He's with USL. Eloy Room was a little bit late joining the crew. He himself, we mentioned earlier, Carlos Vea is going to be missing this tournament because his wife is pregnant. He just welcomed his first child, so he was a little bit late joining crew in training camp. And then, of course, we mentioned earlier with Matt Lamson, he himself is high risk. So while he may well play, there may be reasons to, you know, try to literally protect him. So that as a potential person that, you know, could be someone, and again, somebody that we haven't really had a chance to see too much for crew this year, or at all. Chris Cadden, the acquisition from the Scottish player acquired from Oxford, and the heir apparent, I think, right now for Harrison Offal, although I see him maybe as a little bit more of a Hector Jimenez heir apparent. He seems to be a Swiss Army knife, or potentially be one, as another player highlighted that we could see some of. Derek Etienne, who, if you know, if you follow the crew on social media, he's grown a little bit more of a presence in the recent months for different reasons. His activism in the uprising and the movement for Black Lives. He's been really one of the leading voices for the crew and for MLS in the midst of all these uprisings. And he's another player that, like Cadden, a young player, new to Columbus, and could feature well in this tournament. And then another player that that may not be the most popular on this podcast, but someone that could feature as well in this tournament, Fernando Adi, crew striker, former Portland striker, who didn't score any goals of any importance in 2015. We forget all that. Regardless, what players are you looking forward to seeing the most when this tournament happens? Because it will happen. It's definitely happening, guys.
I think those are some good ones for sure. They're definitely going to rotate. I mean, like you said, Bart, these guys haven't been training regularly. They league slowly were allowed teams to come back, and it was still based on what was going on in your city and whatnot. But the crew feel like they're in a good spot, but they're definitely going to need to rotate. You're going to have games every 5 days or so, which is shorter than what they would do during a normal MLS season. But, so I think you'll see some of those guys. I'll be interested, you mentioned Hector Jimenez. I'll be interested to see how much he features, in a rotational sense. The last time we saw this team, Milton Valenzuela got hurt or was hurt. And so, he's should be fully healthy now, but I imagine they'll rotate there. The center back position, how often do you change that spot up? That's something that Caleb Porter would ideally like to have, a steady presence in. But when you're playing as many games as they potentially can, do you play Josh Williams a little bit more? Axel Søberg is back with the team. He was going to go on loan early in the season. So they have some depth at that spot. I do think you'll see Fernando Adi. I don't think you want to run Giassi Zardes into the ground in these games early on. If they play these 18 to 22 games later in the season, you want to be a part of that. So I think there's some good names there. I'm excited for Etienne. I liked what he showed in the preseason. And I like what I've seen with him from other MLS teams. So he's a guy who I think could, not only for this tournament, but beyond, could be a nice spark plug off the bench and a rotational guy for the team.
Yes. For me, Etienne is kind of like a perfect type of player you want to have in a small tournament like this, especially with five substitutions. Remember, there's going to be five substitutions for every single team within three stoppages. That's in part to help with the fact that they haven't been training a lot to prevent some injuries. The Premier League was doing a water break every half. I don't know if they're going to do that for MLS's back. I think they should.
They need to.
Yeah, they kind of need to. I know, with the humidity and the heat and everything, but Etienne is the perfect guy you want coming off the bench for the crew, maybe even getting a start here and there. Comes off the bench maybe in the second half, brings that speed, running a tire defenders who maybe had just played their first or second game in there. You get that game against Atlanta, maybe they start a back line that's pretty tired, you bring on Etienne or a Luis Diaz that can just run at them, get them tired, create that space. Fernando Adi is the kind of player you want in a tournament situation where you need a late goal to get a point or to get a win. Come on as a target man, get a big header into the box or just come in to get a score whenever you need that. And then Chris Cadden, for me, is the ultimate person you want starting and or coming off as a sub in a tournament format. Versatile. You can just put him on for anybody. You see someone who's tired, maybe someone gets hurt, maybe someone's not playing very well, you just stick him in. I would expect him to play in every single game this tournament. You always have to have a man on your squad when you get to, like a World Cup or a Euros, that can play in multiple positions, can play defensively, can play in the midfield, maybe even do a job up front. Cadden is going to be that person for the crew when we get to this tournament in group stage play. And then hopefully beyond, when you get to the knockout stages, you have someone that can play all these different positions. And with five subs, you can do squad rotation. You can mix up the starting lineups here and there. And you can rest guys as well. Like if the crew go ahead and beat Cincinnati, maybe get a point against the Red Bulls, 4 points is basically like an 80% chance you're getting into the knockout stage at the very least, probably going to be coming in second place. So you don't have to start Zellerayan and Zardes and Nagby. You can maybe give Mensah and Vermgo a rest. Maybe you get Tarbell in goal, give him some game time as well. So a lot of things that I'm very interested to see regarding the squads, regarding substitutions and the starting 11 for the group stage, especially.
Do we know who the player is?
No.
Who tested positive?
No. We do not.
Not public information? Okay.
Correct. But one thing I want to point out, and this is something that I wrote about, but that Caleb Porter's talked about, is that, they may not start, even in the first game, their first choice lineup, just because, guys came back when they were able to start training again at different levels. So you know, maybe not your entire first team is 90 minutes fit. I mean, they've done some inter squad scrimmages. They were supposed to have a scrimmage yesterday, which I don't know if that even happened or not, given the what's gone on down there. But you know, you may not see what is ideally the first choice group in that first game, just because they're going to play guys that they know are able to go, you know, 60, 70, 90 minutes, whatever it may be. You don't want to have an injury in the first game that then screws you for the rest of the season. So keep that in mind when you know, assuming this happens, if when lineups come out and whatnot, if you notice somebody's not in there that you think normally would be, it could just be that players just aren't ready to go 90 minutes. And there's, as we've mentioned, there's the five subs and the game's coming close together. So there'll definitely be rotation. I think we'll see a lot of different lineups.
So are we just going to find out who the positive player is because we're going to get like three games into this thing and then this guy is not going to be there for the whole time? Not going to be on the bench?
Yeah, I guess.
That's weird. Essentially. It'll be a process of elimination situation.
Though actually, by the time that things get going, they maybe have had two negative tests in a row. So depending on like how far along it was, I guess. So maybe we'll never know.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. Okay. Very interesting. I definitely like the idea of them just like testing negative and then going into the starting lineup when they had coronavirus like a week earlier. Like that makes me feel even better about how top-notch this whole operation is going to be. If that happens, they'll be like, no, they're good. They had a negative test. We're fine. These tests are super reliable. So yeah. Interesting.
I'll tell you one thing. You know, what's interesting for this is this tournament. I know we've kind of talked about it. Obviously it was put together, you know, slapdash, in you know, very MLS fashion. But it's not like there aren't any stakes from this competitive-wise. One of them's a CONCACAF Champions League spot. I guess I'm assuming taking the spot that would have normally been for the Open Cup.
Supporter Shield.
Supporter Shield. Ah, there you go. So it is at least a tournament with some stakes and we certainly hope that that we'll be able to see it. Crew again, looking, you know, fingers crossed, like they could be in good shape for it. Matt Doyle on MLS.com pointed out, as you pointed out earlier too, Ori, that you know, winning that first game, it's going to be essential for Crew. And so I think with that, you know, maybe unless there are any other big points we want to, you know, talk about or any other storylines we want to speculate on, I think we want to maybe get some picks as we are wont to do here on the Massive Report podcast. Hearing any objections? All right. Hearing none. Well, that's some meeting speak for you all. let's go around and get some picks and let's start with Pat Murphy. What do you think against In Hell Is Real, In Hell on Earth, Orlando?
I think, you know, assuming that the Crew are able to, you know, fitness wise field what we would think of as mostly a full strength team, I think this should be one of their easier games. I watched Cincinnati in their first two games at the beginning of the season and they played okay against New York, but still just don't look like a put together team. Obviously you have the new coach. We talked about that coming in. He'll want to install some ideas that they haven't had a ton of time to work on. Whereas the Crew had a full preseason with all their group and then essentially had a smaller second preseason. So, you know, I'll say something like 3-1 Crew.
We like to see it. All right, Ori, what are you thinking?
So I'm thinking for the opening game usually is kind of a toss-up in regards to, you know, you never know which team is going to maybe play the best, but just based on the depth in the squad and skill of player, you have to favor the Crew for this game. I think that's obvious. I mean, I don't know if FC Cincinnati maybe is the Iceland of this tournament. Who knows? They could just pop out of nowhere and make the semifinals or the quarterfinals, but that seems rather unlikely. And I know a hard no from Pat would come from that analogy. But I think the Crew will win the game, and I think it will put them in position at the very least to finish in third in the group. I am going to say a 1-0 victory, because one thing that I'm noticing when we're seeing Premier League and Bundesliga, when these leagues sort of restarted, teams are cold. We're not seeing a lot of goals. Games are tend to be pretty boring. There's a lot of passing in the midfield. So I'm not expecting a lot of goals when the tournament gets started. Teams are going to be a little more defensive. But when we get to the Red Bull and Atlanta games, maybe we start to see a little more openness in attack, openness in the offense, more goals. So I'll go with a simple, subtle 1-0 Crew win in Hell is Real in Orlando, something nobody thought we were going to say in February.
You or you're clearly not watching very many Newcastle United games because it's goals galore, baby.
That's true, yeah. But when you're watching Spurs and Everton or Liverpool when they're like half drunk from celebrating playing Villa, there's not much going on in those games.
That is a good point. All right, Alex, what you got?
So
and you cannot pick the coronavirus to win this one.
I was just going to say that. I'm not going to pick the coronavirus to win this game. The coronavirus will win the tournament, but not the game. I'm going to go with 4-1. I think FC Cincinnati are still terrible. I think they're going to be terrible for at least a few years. What I want to say is I will not be gloating on Twitter about this game because I do not care. I do not care about this tournament. It's a Mickey Mouse Cup as far as I'm concerned and do not care. Literally a Mickey Mouse Cup.
Yep.
But yeah, I think Cincy suck. And if the game is played, which I hope it's not, I think the Crew will take care of business without too much trouble.
All right. I'll stick with 4-0. I think that sounds pretty good. I think FC Cincy is just going to be over their head. You know, you make one mistake, and I think that this Crew attack is going to pounce on it. I think they're going to score one early. We know that's something that Caleb Porter likes to try to do attack early. And I think just the combination of just the skills gap, the coaching skills gap, just relative familiarity with the team is just going to be too much for FC Cincinnati to handle. And Crew are going to go ahead and they're going to work them. They're going to wax them. I think I'm feeling a brace from Lucas. I'm feeling a brace from Lucas.
I like it.
Yeah. I think maybe he gets, scores one and then is going to get a penalty. Because obviously, yeah. You know, just FC Cincy, just stupid tackle, just maybe gets the just flicks the heel, doesn't even really touch it, but it's going to be enough. And then we're going to get Pachenko from Lucas to get that second one, just really, really break their will.
I like it. And I just want to state that my 4-1 prediction assumes that FC Cincy bring the correct coach to the game. If they accidentally grab the wrong guy from the hotel and leave their actual coach at the Swan and Dolphin, then I'm going to make it 6-1. But assuming that they bring all the correct people to the game, 4-1.
It's amazing the way we're talking about Cincy here because we're playing in these outdoor facilities. It's me, Pat, and Brian we're talking about. It's going to feel like, you know, your junior high select soccer tournament. FC Cincinnati is the team that's just going to be kicking the ball into the woods, and then Eloy Room's going to have to walk into the woods to find the ball because there's only two other balls that are there that both also got lost in the woods. So, seriously, not high praise for FC Cincinnati over here at the Massive Report Pod.
I think a select team could beat them. I think it'd be maybe 1-0.
Do you think they'll have the right guy to bring orange slices to them at halftime?
They should hire the other coach and have him be the orange slice guy. They should find whoever that guy was and be like, listen, I know you're not working right now, so like we'll give you $1,000 to just come to Florida and just like pass out Gatorade.
And then guy number two with the rollable water cooler with Capri Sun and Gatorade in it as well.
They should just get every bald guy in Florida to come down there and help out.
That would be pretty, you know, just on brand for MLS. It's like, okay, we've created this airtight bubble that we only let players in, and then we're letting every bald guy in possible, you know, for FC Cincy.
They should hire 5 bald guys and then post photos of them on Twitter, but have the 5 photos be different, 5 different bald guys.
It's like a CAPTCHA, like to get your to get through. Yeah. You've got to, which one of these is the FC Cincy coach? You've got to click on it to make sure the AI, it's not just AI trying to watch it online.
To be fair, that would be one of the better CAPTCHAs, because with the ones with the sidewalks and the traffic lights, yeah. It's like, what the hell, man? I'm clicking the red light. That's not a traffic sign. Get me on my damn website.
Well, fellas, I hope this tournament goes on, if nothing else, just so we have another chance to talk about this on the Master Report podcast, because it's been good catching up with everyone. Glad to see everyone's well. We're hoping that Brian Phillips, he's on vacation right now and should be enjoying that as well, but hoping that he'll be able to rejoin us, as well as, you know, getting Sam and the rest of the band back together. But it's good seeing everybody else here. I want everyone to stay well. Any other parting thoughts from anyone? Otherwise, we'll just wrap the sucker up.
Wear a mask.
Wear a mask now that it's mandatory in Columbus. Fingers crossed. Saturday at 12:30 a.m., we're doing a post-game pod after a 6-1 Crew Hell is Real victory. Let's go. Saturday, 10:30 p.m. for the first Crew game in 4 months. What a time to be alive.
Emphasis on the be alive part, everyone. Emphasis on the be alive. All right. Stay well. We'll talk to you later. Bye, buddies.